Hi, everybody.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. So tell me, you're working on something yummy and scrumptious and...
Today, no. I have to go grocery shopping and I don't want to go, but that's my goal today.
Yeah.
Maybe later. Yesterday was a crazy baking day. I made eclairs. I did a tart. And pastry cream, so it was, that was fun.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Good morning, Ben Pratt here.
Hey Ben, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. Sounds like my role will be limited.
Well, I no matter any of the speakers that we have, I think you're going to be able to jump in, offer insight and some advice, and I think it'll be great.
Perfect. I will strategically jump in as needed.
Okay. And listen, if you didn't, then what could you hang over Scott's head?
Well, there's a lot, but that's that's a totally different story.
Okay. All right. That's a entirely different Zoom then. And so as people join, I know some people have their videos blocked. That's fine. If anyone wants to talk during these few minutes before we begin, please feel free to, but then once the program begins, we are going to mute. If everyone can make sure they mute themselves, just because even though you don't think that the sound shows up, it does, and this will be helpful for our speakers to be able to communicate and then not pick up any background noise. Sometimes I even have to mute myself because I have two kids. They run into the kitchen to get something. I just do a crazy eye. So if you see crazy eyes, that's me communicating with my children. And I mute myself so that I can talk through my teeth, which I'm getting very good at. So once this chamber is done, I might be a ventriloquist. I don't know. I'm going to keep practicing. We'll see. We're going to give it a few more minutes. So if anybody wants to grab some tea or some coffee, or if on this Friday morning you're thinking about something stronger, no judgment here. We understand.
Will this discuss the fact that your name is on a business and then you work for another company and then you're laid off from the first company? You understand what I'm saying?
I think what we're going to have this morning is an update from Labor and Industry Secretary Olesiak. And also joining the call will be the Director of the Office of UC Benefits, Susan Dickinson. So I'm pretty sure what's going to happen is an overview. And then as people start to have questions, there's a chat room. So if you want to put your question into the chat, we also have someone who's assisting us from the Quakertown Borough who will then be emailing me the questions. And then at the end, I'll be able to go through. I also let people know that if your question did not get addressed, afterwards, I'll try to send a follow-up email if there's any helpful websites or helpful information. I'll send a follow-up email, and then at that time, if you want to send me an email with your question. It's one of those things where it's hard to say if everyone's exact question will be answered, if there's some general questions that can be answered, but I'm sure with our connections, we can try to get specific questions answered if they don't get addressed during this time.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. So I'm just
you'll be posting your email later?
Yeah. So after this event, I'll usually send an email to all the people who are registered and I will provide my cell phone and my email on there.
All right. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm just going to give it a few more minutes.
Hi, this is Jerry Alexiak joining the call.
Hello, Secretary. Thank you so much for being here with us this morning.
Thank you. I'm glad I could.
I was looking up your bio, and I feel like I knew this information before, but that you were born and raised in Philadelphia and reside in Glenside, which is where my mom grew up. So I hear a lot about that area, and it's a really beautiful area.
It is. Actually, we just moved from Glenside about 2 years ago, so I have to update that.
Yeah, you do. Oh, gosh.
We moved all of 5 minutes away. We're in Dresher.
Okay.
So, we didn't go very far. But yeah, I grew up in Philadelphia, went to school at St. Joe's, and still am in the city as much as I can. And I actually went to high school in Bucks County at Holy Ghost Prep.
Wonderful. Well, welcome back to Bucks County.
Thank you.
Glad that you could be with us this morning. I'm going to let a few minutes go by. I know it's 11:01, but I want to let some people who might be having some issues just be able to get on. So as much as multitasking is something that chamber people and most business people are very good at, this morning I'll be on my personal laptop with our Zoom. Checking emails through my phone and our email system. So I appreciate everyone's patience. We are also recording this, so any helpful information can be provided on our website afterwards. And as I did mention, we'll be sending a follow-up email to all the people who registered, and hopefully we'll provide some helpful information. If you have questions, please put them through the chat function. And we have Ashton from the Quakertown Borough who's going to be helping, assisting, sending me some questions via my computer. It's the best way for me to be able to see the questions. And as always, if your question does not get answered, when I send the follow-up email, please feel free to let me know what your question is, and we will try to connect you with the correct agency to answer that. I know everyone's very eager, and they all have very personal situations and very personal scenarios that they want to get addressed this morning, and I completely understand that. So we'll do our best to get these questions answered. So for anyone who doesn't know me, the lady talking, I'm Danielle Bodner. I'm the executive director of the Upper Bucks Chamber. I've been with the chamber a little over a year, and these are very interesting times for the chamber. So we have been very proud to work with our community leaders in the Quakertown region. The Upper Bucks Chamber does serve Penridge, Palisades, and Quakertown school districts. But during this COVID crisis, we have been working with Quakertown Borough, Milford Township, Richland Township, Haycock Township, Drumbarrowsville Borough, Richland Town Borough, our school district, Quakertown School District, St. Luke's University Health Network, Quakertown Alive, our Main Street program, and the Chamber. And that doesn't mention all the other board members, council members who have been assisting us and our staff. So I want to welcome everyone to this Friday, rainy morning, TGIF to everyone. And we are very honored and excited to be able to host this morning Pennsylvania Labor and Industry Secretary, Jerry Alexiak. And we also, I was like practicing your last name. I was also made aware that we also have on the call Director of the Office of UC Benefits Policy, Susan Dickinson. And we also have top labor attorney, Ben Pratt, who is also on the line and will be jumping in later. Ben is a partner with Kegel, Keelan, Alme, and Lord law firm in the York area. So I'll stop talking. Secretary, would you like to address our group? And again, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. I believe Susan will not be joining me this morning, but Well, I will have another UC person, Swenge Shamatutu, who we call Shama. Shama is the person who oversees our call centers. So I'm pretty sure he will be joining us as well. Let me start again by thanking you for the opportunity to be here. A little bit of background on myself. I have been the secretary for labor and industry for about 2.5 years. I spent most of my life as an educator. I was a classroom teacher for over 30 years, got involved with PSEA, the Pennsylvania State Education Association, as state president. And in the middle of that, the governor reached out and asked if I would take this position, and I'm honored to be serving the citizens of Pennsylvania right now. And from the very start, I would tell our staff that as important as it is that we follow all the rules and regulations and make sure we stay in budget follow what the guidelines the federal government gives us and all that bureaucratic stuff that we need to do, and that is important. What's most important to me is that we remember there are real people at the end of the process. There are people in need. Labor and industry, as I'm sure you know, doesn't just do unemployment compensation, mm-hmm. which is a big issue right now, but workers' compensation, safety and labor management, workforce development, and we also have an Office of Vocational Rehabilitation where we work with citizens with disabilities to help them find employment. So we are, we're very busy, and the work that we do really matters in people's lives. And that's been no more apparent than it's been since the COVID-19 outbreak. There, Shama has joined us. Hi, Shama. Just to give some context to the numbers, in the 3 weeks before the mitigation efforts began and Pennsylvania was really hit with the issues that we're facing now, we had a total of 40,000 new unemployment claims in those 3 weeks. In less than 3 weeks after the mitigation efforts, we crossed 1 million. And as of this morning, we have 1.6 million initial unemployment claims that we have accepted since March 15th. So we went from almost a record low unemployment numbers to unprecedented numbers that we have never, ever seen. And that happened within a matter of a week or so. So we are to say we have been swamped is to put it mildly. We have responded. We have thus far been able to issue over 5 million payments since March 15th, some of those to existing claims, some many to the new claims. And we've given out a total of almost $2 billion in benefits since March 15th. That's in our traditional unemployment system. I'm sure you're very aware of the CARES Act, the federal government's legislation to expand help to workers, businesses throughout the country. Three parts of that had an impact on what we do at unemployment. The one piece of it extended benefits from 26 weeks to 39 weeks for folks who are impacted. The other piece is the extra $600. That's part of the federal pandemic unemployment compensation piece. So everyone who has a claim as of April 24th, moving forward, I think, till sometime in July, and Shama could give me the exact date, but all those claims will receive an extra $600, and they don't have to do anything to receive those claims or that extra money. And we've begun that process last weekend where so far we've been able to make about 820,000 payments to people, totaling about $500 million, over $490 million that we have been able to distribute in that time period. The third piece is the PUA, that's the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance. And that is the piece of the Federal CARES Act that allows us to provide benefits to people who do not normally receive benefits. That includes people who are self-employed, some small business owners, depending on their particular situation, 10 people who receive 1099s, gig employees, people who there's a lot of technical pieces to it, but that's generally who is eligible, and there are others, and we can, Shama can really break that down if you have questions about it. Part of what we had to face as an agency with beginning the PUA payments was getting the guidelines that we needed from the federal government, and that took a little bit of time, and then getting a completely new system in place. We could not put those benefits for those people who are not traditionally eligible along with our traditional system. So we have worked with our vendor that we have, Geographic Solutions, who was in the process of upgrading our system anyway, and we're going to go live with a new system in October. But we worked with them and our IT folks, our unemployment compensation folks, to create a system that went live last weekend. As with any system that goes live, there were a few glitches with that. But as of today, as of this morning, I can tell you we have been able to, we've successfully accepted almost 90,000 claims in the 5 days that has been, excuse me, almost a week now, that has been functioning. So to say we have been busy is an understatement. In order to respond to that, demand that we face so quickly, we've done quite a bit of things internally. We have taken people who in labor and industry who used to work in unemployment and now work in other areas. We've brought some of them back to help out. We have several hundred people from other agencies within the government that we are working with. Some have UC experience, some do not, and we're working with them to get them up to speed to help with emails and phone calls. We are in the process of hiring at least 100, probably more, intake interviewers, intermittent intake or initial intake interviewers. I can never remember what it is, triple I's we call them, who are the ones that are the first people to answer phones and to work with people calling. So we're in the process of hiring them. We hope to have them working by mid-May. We've upgraded our technology. We're using some artificial intelligence, Watson from IBM, for example, who apparently our folks call Paula. I have no idea why, but they Paula is the AI system that we're using. And we're bringing back annuitants. That's another piece that I forgot. We've got at least 70, probably more by now, retirees from the unemployment system that are coming back to help us. So again, this is just unprecedented demand and challenges that we're facing. I understand people are frustrated who can't get through and who are having problems with their applications. Believe me, we are frustrated as well. We are not in the business of holding money back or sitting on federal dollars. But we want to respond to our fellow citizens. I have family members impacted by this, as I'm sure many of you do. These are our fellow citizens, and we care very much about them, and we want to do all we can to provide the benefits to some of the businesses we work with and primarily those people who are unemployed. So with that, we'll open it up to any questions you have, unless Shama, I don't know if you want to say anything to start, and then we can take questions.
If Shama could jump in, that would be great, just to give an overview before I'm sure the questions start to fall in.
Gladly, thank you. Yes, my name is Sungwe Shamatutu. I am the director of our six unemployment service centers that are spread out across the state. But everyone calls me Shama, so feel free to call me Shama. We have on the front lines of this, I have around 250 intake interviewers who are answering phone calls now 5 days a week, and also answering chat and email questions. And then in support of that, I also have around 200 examiners who are responsible for writing the determinations that make individuals eligible for unemployment. So just to give you a broad overview of the staffing numbers. And as the secretary mentioned, we are in the process of creating two separate types of trainings in general. One is for other support agencies within the Commonwealth to help us quickly respond to some of the more frequently asked questions that we receive. And then we are creating a new virtual training for all of the new staff we're bringing on board starting in May. We're aiming right now to have our classes of around 125 at a time. And we're going to keep hiring and training more people to meet the demand that we're currently facing. And to answer the secretary's question on the $600 payments, That will continue until July 25th, the claim week ending July 25th.
Okay. Great. Thank you for that. The first question that I can see is, as a self-employed consultant, I'm still trying to generate business, but do not have enough income to pay myself the salary I was receiving. Is that person eligible for the PUA benefit?
So they're currently receiving some form of income, but it's at a reduced number and reduced hours from what they previously were?
I believe so. So a self-employed consultant is trying to still generate business, but doesn't have enough income to pay themselves
the salary that
they were receiving.
Yes, they should apply for our PUA program, correct.
Okay. As a matter of fact, is it possible just to drill down a little bit more on the PUA, explain once again who is eligible for PUA and what I'm hearing is, as you understand, the delayed times, and maybe if there's also insight in the best way people can try to communicate, best times to call, best times to email. So a little bit more on the PUA would be great.
Sure. So for PUA, in general, when I first read the federal guidance that was provided, it really, the federal government really made it really broad for a lot of people to be able to receive these benefits through PUA. The one criteria, though, that everyone has to remember in regards to PUA is if you're eligible for regular unemployment, that's the path you should go through first. We're not, if you are a person who is normally not qualifying for unemployment, so in this case, people that are self-employed, gig workers, that's the broad scope of what PUA was set up for. But it does support other populations. So for example, if someone was denied for unemployment when they filed in, let's say March, end of March, when the mitigation efforts began, they applied and they were denied for unemployment, there's an opportunity for them to be able to receive benefits for that March period through PUA. But they could also be receiving benefits for let's say when the quarter change occurred in April moving forward. So there's a broad population of people that could be potentially receiving a portion of their benefits for the first weeks of March, for example, because they didn't have enough earnings to qualify for regular unemployment. But with the quarter change, now they do qualify for regular unemployment and could be and will receive benefits through regular unemployment, but will get a portion paid out through PUA for those few weeks in March when they were ineligible. Okay. And then what was your other question?
The next one I see is, and I appreciate everyone's patience with the question and answer part. The next one I see is, I'm an independent contractor, sole proprietor, and I get paid 30 to 60 days after I perform my services. How do I report that for unemployment, or do I not report that?
Right. So when they're filling out their application for PUA, we're asking first if they have their federal taxes completed for 2019 to use those. That's the easiest way for us to be able to quickly get them their proper weekly benefit rate. So if they have those, that's what they should be using. However, we understand because of everything happening, and even on the IRS side, they're also overwhelmed and trying to handle this, that might not have been done. So there's some additional documentation that we've listed on our website that they can use. So what we're asking for is for them to provide the documentation. I mean, and a simple way to think about it is the documentation you would use to support the taxes that you would file. So whatever documentation you can use to prove, hey, this is what my earnings were, this is what my income was, That's what they should be using when they're filling out their PUA application.
If I could add, Danielle, I know I saw a few questions and I meant to mention this at the start. Our website is uc.pa.gov, uc.pa.gov. And when you go to that website, there will be, you know, several options. We have a wide range of FAQs, frequently asked questions related to traditional unemployment, PUA, the $600, who's eligible, what's the best way to file. We're constantly updating those questions as we learn the issues that people are having. One of the things that, a term I've used more than I ever thought I would, fact specific. So many of these applications are very fact specific, and it really depends, as Shama mentioned, one piece of information that could impact. Part of it is UC, part of it is PUA, all these acronyms. There's also people that have income from different states or several employers, or and all of these have an impact on how you are going to be receiving benefits. So what we're asking people to do is go to the website, read the frequently asked questions, see if that helps answer those questions. And if in doubt, apply. If you're unsure, apply. So that that website is a great resource for people.
Okay, that's great information. And I think as a reminder, we'll send the website to everyone again. The next question I have is, someone applied for PUA last Saturday and received a claim number and claim details. What do they do now? Do they do nothing other than wait to hear back? If so, how long will it generally take to hear? And the claim detail does say continue to file your weekly claim. And can you clarify what the term continue to file your weekly claim indicates?
Sure. So right when we launched the PUA program last week, well, I guess it was Saturday, not even last week, just Saturday.
Feels that long, huh?
yeah. The best way to think about what we did was we stood up a online application. So if COVID wasn't happening right now, all we've done is provided an opportunity for people to hand us a paper application, but online. Mm-hmm. The full system functionality hasn't been done yet, but we wanted to get everyone in the queue. So as we're building it and resolving these issues, we can start immediately paying individuals their benefits. So to answer that person's question, yes, they should just wait. They've gotten their confirmation numbers. There's nothing more for them to do. In another frequently asked question that's happening right now is people are seeing as they're going around in the system that their weekly benefit rate is 195. That's just a default number by the system. That's because this is the full system functionality isn't built in yet. It's defaulting to the lowest possible amount someone would be eligible for. So people shouldn't think that that's what we deem them eligible for. That's just a default number. When the full system functionality rolls out, that number will also change.
Okay. If you filed your initial claim but didn't receive a PIN number, how do you file your first biweekly claim? Do you wait to receive your paperwork in the mail, even if you're supposed to file a claim in the next few days?
This is a great question, actually. So we've been working to modernize our regular unemployment system for the last 2.5 years. Well, I guess year and a half now. The beauty of that is people are seeing a preview of that in this PUA application, what our new unemployment system will look like. Our new unemployment system will not require PINs. So the headache of people having to get a PIN in order to file their weekly or biweekly certifications will go away for everybody. Luckily, I guess, for the self-employed and gig workers that are filing for PUA now, they have no PIN. So their username and password will be the way they log into the system and file their certifications and claim weeks. So no one that's filing in our pool application is going to receive a PIN, because for us, the PIN is how we verify and prevent fraud from occurring in the unemployment system. So our current legacy mainframe system doesn't have the capabilities to create logins and connect on the back end. So we use a PIN as a way for people to log in and file their weekly certifications. But the new program does not have PINs.
Okay.
Real quick, the other question was for weekly certifications. People don't need to do that right now. Once the full system functionality comes online, they'll file their weekly certifications then.
And Shama, if I could, could you explain a little bit about, for those who have filed for regular unemployment, there have been some delays with PINs. We're getting them all out now. Could you give some background on that as well?
Yes. So because of the current application that we're using, our mainframe system, I should say, when the mitigation efforts began, we started receiving, you know, hundreds of thousands of claims in a matter of weeks that would normally happen over a course of months or even years. And that caused a big backlog first, initially with our interaction with the Social Security Administration to verify people's identities and make sure that people weren't filing potentially fraudulent claims or stealing other people's benefits. That initial connection was backlogged because it was happening across the nation. We've worked through all of that. Now the issue of people not receiving their PINs when they filed from maybe March 16th, March 20th, those early weeks when this all started, we've identified who those people are, and we're working to process their claims. There's two main buckets of people that those fall into, of the new initial claims buckets. So one is people who, after our Social Security verification check, the Social Security Administration found that the information they used to file their initial claim didn't match what was in the Social Security Administration's record for them. So for example, they used the wrong SSN, or they had, you know, one digit off, or they put their first name as their last name, which there's a lot of those, if you think about that. People put in their wrong date of birth. Some people put, for example, like their date of birth as March 20th, 2020. So that caused the delay. And for all these lists of people, there was about 18,000 of them. On my end, my staff has to manually go through each of those individually, one-on-one, to sort that out and fix that for the claimant. There isn't anything they can do themselves on our online application. We have to do that our end through the system. So we're working through that list, and we've been dedicating extra staff to get through that list as quickly as we can. The issue is that, unfortunately, it just takes time. And then there's a separate bucket of individuals who, when they filed their initial application, their home address matched their work address. So in our mind, under normal conditions, that would lead us to believe this person is potentially self-employed and should not be receiving regular UC benefits. So we flag that and pull those away, so that we can review those again manually. However, this week we were able to, our IT folks were able to put in some system changes and automate that process for us. So the initial bucket of those claims was about 40,000 people. IT was able to automate that process for us, and now we're down to around 200 or 250 people that we have to manually check ourselves. And all of those 40,000 people will soon start receiving things in the mail saying either they're financially ineligible or eligible, their PIN numbers, their debit cards, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the vast majority of those folks are likely going to be denied because they're self-employed and they should be filing through PUA.
Okay.
So those that gets to the big issue around pins and why people are, so there seems to be a group of people who still haven't received their pins yet from the system.
Sure, and if I'll add one piece, anybody whose pin is delayed or application is delayed for any reason, if they are ultimately eligible, they will be made whole. No one's going to be punished because there was a technological glitch or an issue with their application. People will get the benefits from the time they file.
Okay. This question says, our employees have come off PUC because of the payment protection plan funds. When they have to go back in 8 weeks, will there be an issue with it still being a disaster-related separation? Well, I'll say their employees have come off PUC because of the triple P funds. When they have to go back in 8 weeks, will there be any issue with it still being a disaster-related separation?
So they're currently, so I guess they're receiving regular unemployment benefits right now. They're talking about their employees. And then the employer received funding through through PPP, and now they're supporting those employees. Is that what's happening?
I think so, yeah. So it was, they were getting, it doesn't say PUA, so I guess it's the regular unemployment, and then employer got the triple P.
Right, gotcha. Okay, yeah. So for the, they have to be a little bit careful here, but because from an unemployment perspective, these individuals are now receiving their wages and benefits, right? So moving forward, they're being paid and from their regular employment, so they shouldn't be claiming unemployment benefits because they're no longer unemployed in that sense. It's similar to people that are, we've had a few people who filed for unemployment because they are working from home or because they are receiving or using their leave and thinking that they can collect unemployment as well, right? They're technically not unemployed anymore, or they are in that current state, they're not unemployed yet. So they, if the individuals are being paid through their employer, they are no longer unemployed.
So this seems like a technical or has some dates in it. So it says the initial application was March 29th. The first bi-weekly submission was April 14th. They received their PIN number and confirmation of receiving that bi-weekly submission and have not heard anything since. So again, I think a lot of these are going to be somewhere in the process. I don't know exactly the next step and what something that I mentioned before, you know, if people do have questions about their specific case, is it best? I know I've heard people say they get on the phone and they're hearing a lot of delay times, which is understandable. So the best way for people to check on the timing, phone, email, is there, you said maybe a chat function, sending a fax?
Yes. Yeah, so right now, well, for one, please don't fax us. please don't
fax. I was joking because I didn't think many people had faxes.
I know. And unfortunately, we're receiving thousands of them. But anyway, that's a separate point. for that situation, the individual said they filed their biweekly claim when?
So the initial application was March 29th. And their first biweekly submission was April 14th. They received a PIN number and confirmation of receiving that biweekly submission and have heard nothing since April 14th.
Okay, so normally we do not reach out unless there's an issue. So for that person, if they filed their biweekly claim on Tuesday, the 14th of April, normally it takes between us getting the payment to Treasury, from Treasury getting the payment to the bank depositing the payment into their account, if it's direct deposit, or Treasury putting it onto a debit card, it's usually about 2 to 3 days. So that person should have received should be receiving their, should have received their payment in their account either on Friday or Monday the 20th. They can check to see if that payment has gone through on our ucpa.gov website by clicking on our Manage Your Benefits tab, and they'll be able to log in and see the if the payment was processed and is on its way.
Okay. Unemployment for independent contractors and sole proprietors. Say I must report income each week if I'm working 25% of what I usually am, but I only get paid from the business every 30 days or so. Actually, they actually have no income in their pocket. So what do I file on the unemployment site when asked? So they're an unemployment for independent contractor, sole proprietor, that they must report income each week if I'm working 25% of what I usually am, but I only get paid from the business every 30 days.
Right. So we want to know what was earned during that week. That's what we're concerned about. Not when you were paid, but when it was earned. Because we're going to make our benefit amount to you based on that.
Okay. And I apologize. I just want to confirm this. I know you mentioned it before, but just to clarify, they applied for PUA on Saturday. It said they would receive the 195, not the 600. But you just mentioned the 195 is kind of a default.
Right.
They're understanding the 195 is the traditional UC, which I shouldn't qualify as a sole proprietor. Is there something that they need to do to fix that, or is that just the default and they will start receiving the 600?
Okay, so.
That's two questions, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, that's two separate things, right, yeah. So as far as the PUA application, not regular UC, as far as the PUA application, that 195 is the default number. Okay. People don't need to do, there's nothing for them to do right now until we launch the full system functionality. As far as the 600 is concerned, once we launch PUA and with the full system functionality, they won't have to do anything extra to get the $600. We'll do that automatically by ourselves. So even if after we launch the full system functionality and we review their documents and their actual weekly benefit rate is 195, they'll still get the extra $600 on top of that.
Okay.
Hey, Shama, what is the maximum benefit that people can get in the system right now?
About
572, correct.
Right, thank you.
Yeah.
So we still have a lot of questions coming in, so I appreciate everyone's patience. And once again, if we don't get your question answered now, we'll do our best to try to get something for you. This one says, I'm a commission-only based business. I applied for PUA last Saturday. Some questions didn't apply to me, like payment history. I uploaded my 1099s from 2019. My dashboard indicated three areas being incorrect. Am I supposed to call in or wait for a letter in the mail asking for additional information?
At this time, it's wait.
Okay.
We know that there's some questions that weren't necessarily applicable to everybody. We're working with our vendor to update those questions and change the wording and add some additional functionality. But right now, they should just wait.
Okay. As an employer, do unemployment claims count against me if the UC is due to a closure or reduction in business from COVID?
So, right. So normally, when in regular UC, if a business lays off an individual, and depending on the reason for the separation, they could get charged extra in their taxes they pay into the system as a result of that separation. Because of COVID, I forget the bill that was passed.
Act 68.
There we go, Act 68. We'll be granting automatic relief from charges to employers.
Okay.
So their taxes won't go up.
That's amazing. I'm sure there's a lot of businesses who are sighing a little bit of relief right there. Okay, on to our next set of questions. My wife runs a business, but put my name on it as just in case situation. I've been working 40 hours per week for another company, not the one listed on with my wife. Should I file through PUA for self-employment or regular UC? Well, let me read that again. My wife runs a business, but put my name on it as a just-in-case situation. I've been working 40 hours per week for another company, not the one listed on with my wife. Should I file through PUA for self-employment or regular UC?
That individual who's a full-time employee somewhere else should file for regular UC.
Okay. Normally work full-time plus a part-time. Full-time hours are now reduced, but not the part-time hours. How do I know at what point I would qualify for benefits? Should I apply? So that might be one where it's when in doubt, apply.
Apply. Correct. Okay. Correct. Correct.
And it will be determined. They'll get a monetary determination based on the income that they do have. So if the hours were reduced enough, that person may qualify.
Correct.
Some of us are not even able to make a biweekly claim yet because the system is saying that function is not available yet on PUA.
Question. Correct. Correct. That functionality is not up and running yet.
Okay.
So, and then.
Go ahead, Jeff. Well, you talk and then I'll jump on.
Yeah. So and the thing to remember about PUA also, which we're putting a bunch of communication to get out to the public, is that in PUA, that application, you don't have to wait 2 weeks to file your weekly certification. You can do it every week, or you can do it 2 weeks if that's just simpler to do because it's like regular UC. But if the individual chooses, they can file their weekly certification weekly.
What I was going to add is when we went live with the system last weekend, we knew there would be some glitches, but we also know, as I mentioned earlier, we have 90,000 people who have successfully applied for that. And by doing it last weekend, instead of waiting till we knew the system was, quote, perfect, that could have been another week or two before we could even begin to accept applications. So our thinking was make it available, get as many people in line as possible, work out the glitches, as frustrating as that may be. But those 90,000 people, and then those people who we have worked through the glitches that we probably would have learned 2 weeks ago instead of now, they're going to be able to receive their benefits that much sooner. So it was a conscious decision that we made that even though we knew the system wasn't perfect, we wanted to get as many people in line as possible. And we hope to have actual benefits going out, actual dollars in early May.
Next one says, I've applied for a PUA. If I'm back to work before I actually receive any benefits, will I be paid PUA plus $600 a week for all the weeks I could not work, which started for that person March 13th?
Correct.
Okay. That was an easy one. All right. Let's keep going.
To clarify, the PUA benefits it was early March or early April. I'm sorry. What was the date, Shama?
Oh, right. Oh, the 600. Yeah.
No, but it,
the $600 payments only start the claim week ending April 4th, I believe that date is, and moving forward. It doesn't go back all the way to March or January.
So if somebody applied in March, will they be receiving regular?
Right. They'll receive the normal, I guess, benefit rate amount, just not the $600 on top of that for those March weeks.
And
the
PUA benefit begins as of what date?
That is January. They can go back to
January 27th.
Yep, perfect. January 27th. Thank you.
So if they applied in March, they would be eligible for the COBA benefits. That's what I wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Okay, I'm looking through to see if there's any. This one says the response for PUA eligibility, proof our employment timeliness and proof of employment sufficiency. What do those mean? So PUA eligibility, proof of our employment timeliness and proof of employment sufficiency. Any clarification on what those mean?
I do not know. that's within the application itself. I'm guessing they're asking about a specific question within the application. That's what that sounds like.
Yeah.
The staff that have been working closely with the vendor has not been myself. it's actually been Susan Dickinson staff who normally do that. But in order to get this up and running, we've tried to keep the group small so they can move through all the questions quickly. So I even myself haven't had a chance to walk through the full application myself. So I don't know what screen that's on or what type of clarification there we're trying to ask with that question.
Shama, we can get an answer to that question and get it to you, Danielle.
Okay, great.
Make sure that you get that answer.
The next set of questions I have is, I would like to go back to the question regarding employer got a PPP loan and started paying the employees. If the employer has to lay off people after the employer uses its PPP funds, are the employees eligible again for unemployment?
Right. So they would file for unemployment because, again, they're separated from their job due to COVID. And so they would just file again for unemployment. Well, if they had one open, if they have a claim open, they would reopen their claim.
Okay. Someone heard the requirement to look for work while UC has been waived. Will that be reinstated?
That's waived for at least the duration of the pandemic. I don't know the nuts and bolts of the law right now, but yes, it has been waived for the duration of the pandemic. My guess right now is that once we get to whatever it's going to look like when this is done, that will be reinstated. But during this crisis, that is, they don't have to register or look for a new employer.
This question says, when does the UC program become insolvent?
I can speak to that. We have a trust fund that these funds are paid through, and Shama, you can jump in anywhere. We were nearing solvency on the trust fund. We had expected to get there sometime this summer or fall, which I think solvency for us is 250% of anticipated liability. So we were doing great. Right now, the system is still, the last numbers I saw, and I'd have to look up the exact numbers, but we have used some of that trust fund, obviously. Right now, we are solvent for quite some time. But as we said, these are historic numbers. In the past, when there have been issues with the trust fund and other recessions or other times of employment crisis, we've been able to borrow from the federal government. Sometimes there's interest on those loans. Sometimes they're interest-free loans. We're hoping there's talk of grants, so we won't have to pay it back, but we will continue to provide the benefits, through, again, how long the trust fund will last, I'm not sure, but we will have access to other federal dollars if the federal government handles it as they have in the past.
This question's actually really straightforward. And it's probably hard to determine, but if someone applied for UC today, when could they expect their first check? And it just says UC, not PUA.
Yeah, so if they applied today, I mean, this was their first full week of being unemployed, their biweekly filing would be, I don't look at a calendar, one, two, would be the third. So they're the fastest they could get benefits if they're found eligible would be the, and they filed their biweekly claim on a Sunday. They would be paid on Wednesday the 6th. Is that, should I do that count? I'm looking at my office calendar here, so I'm trying to make it. It's usually, in general, you have your initial claim filing date, take 2 weeks on that, and then the first Sunday, you file your biweekly claim, you get paid that Wednesday, in general.
Okay. One of the questions that I'm somewhat curious about is I'm hearing from some of our chamber members, some of the businesses that are in the workforce community, and you hear a little chatter about the reality of some employees being on unemployment and refusing to come to work or not coming back to work. That's a hard question to address, but I think it's on the top of people's minds.
Sure. Actually, I've spoken to Gene Barr, the state president of the chamber, and Gene and I have talked several times throughout this. If there is work for that person, they have to go back to work. If they don't go back to work and continue to attempt to collect unemployment and actually do collect some because of the timing and all that, that's fraud. And we obviously don't want to see that happen. There is a form that is on our website, and I've shared it with Gene, for employers, if they suspect that there is fraud going on, that they can let us know. But and it would also be fraud on the part of the employer if they said, yeah, okay, go do that. So we want to make sure that there isn't any. So far, it's too early to see what kind of how people are responding and if anybody is trying to beat the system. But that's something that we take very seriously, and we certainly will work with employers, employees to make sure that doesn't happen.
Okay. How do you file for back benefits that you were eligible before you were approved? So it says, how do you file for back benefits that you're eligible for before you were approved?
So I guess it's a backdating question. If it's regular unemployment, my staff can backdate it to a point when they're eligible. If it's for PUA, when you file your initial application, you can select a date and do it yourself.
Okay. And PUA benefits, you said early May, there's no exact date or...
Yeah.
Okay.
And no exact date. We are, I hate to use cliche. We really are building the plane as we're flying it. And we are hoping to have the system fully completed and ready to make payments by early May.
Okay.
Danielle, I'm sorry. I have a call at 12, so I am going to have to get off. And I
thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And I'll leave my... my trusted wingman behind, and can answer questions that he can answer. And if there's anything, Shama, that needs to be sent my way, please, just get them there. And thank you all for the opportunity. Please know that we are dancing as fast as we can to make sure that we answer these questions, we get people the benefits they're entitled to. We understand the frustration. As I said in the beginning, we are frustrated too. And these are our family and friends and relatives that are in line as well. So thanks for the opportunity to answer these questions. I hope it was helpful, and good luck to all of you through this.
Thank you so much. And we hope that we'll be able to maybe secure you another time to talk about issues other than UC, since labor and industry does dive into a lot of workforce issues. So thank you again. Enjoy the rest of your day. Everyone can remain on. Now, if everyone will allow, we have Ben Pratt on the line, and I just wanted Ben to give kind of his insight and overview. If you continue to have UC questions that I did not address, please email me at dbodnar@ubcc.org. That's dbodnar@ubcc.org. And me and my best friend Shama now will answer all those questions later. But no, we'll really try to help you. But Ben, if you want to jump in and offer some thoughts. And then I guess if people have specific questions for Ben, if you can note that in the chat, that would be helpful.
Thank you very much. I think that the secretary and Shama have been doing a really good job in regard to this, and I do agree their website is excellent in answering a lot of the questions that people have been presenting today. It is something that there are a lot of questions and a lot of answers, and I think Shama's done a great job of just as things hit the ground answering the questions. So. I really don't have much more to add except the fact that because this is a moving object and people do have to be patient, but it is a lot of the questions that have been asked about documentation. People look at, if you're looking at commission or looking at you're working as a contract employee or an on-call employee, contracts, invoices, those types of things, I'm sure would help with your claim to prove what you would have made, and understand that there are some responsibilities on your part to answer the questions, and it has to be part of, especially for the PUA, is that some of this has to be associated with the COVID-19, about being diagnosed, someone in your household being diagnosed with COVID-19, caring for a family member. There's a number of items that have to be, that not only just being laid off, but can assist you in getting some unemployment assistance. So make sure that you look at that website and see those the frequently asked questions to assist you in filing your claims. But I think everything's been pretty well addressed by the secretary and with Shama at this point in time.
Ben, are you receiving any common employer concerns
The one question about an individual, individuals being there's work available, they've been deemed essential, and not going to work. There are some concerns that the employers have in that regard of about, the governor has stated that we are in a shutdown and you shouldn't be going to work, but yet they've been deemed essential and they are concerned or scared and don't want to show up. There's still work available. And that, I guess that's a question for Shama, really. If I'm deemed essential and I have to go into work, or I'm asked to come into work, but yet I don't feel comfortable in doing so, how would someone answer questions in regard to unemployment in that regard?
Right. Yeah. So we've also started as we start to, as all states start thinking about how to reopen, we've sent clarifying questions to the U.S. Department of Labor to make sure that we're not missing anything. But in general, it's a fact-based decision that I mentioned that my examiners will make. So what we'll do is, the secretary mentioned the refusal of suitable work form that's on our website. An employer can fill that out, say, these individuals or this individual refused to come to work. And then what my examiners will do is they'll reach out to the employer to gather any additional facts that are needed. They'll reach out to the claimant or employee and gather facts from them as well, because one thing that we still need some clarification on from the feds is if an employer has provided a safe work environment, they're doing social distancing, et cetera, they're providing PPE, they're doing everything they can to make it sure that this is a safe environment for their employee to work in, but a employee just refusing to come in because they're scared of contracting COVID-19. What do we, because in my mind, and this is just me, in my mind, the employer's proven their their case, right? Then this employee shouldn't be receiving unemployment. They're refusing suitable work. Or if we reach out to the employee and the employee says, yes, that's all true, that my employer has done all and taken all these considerations. But for me specifically, I have a doctor's note that puts me in a high risk category. So what do we do in that case? So we've raised these questions to the U.S. Department of Labor to see if they have any guidance that they want us to follow, because it's new territory for us as well.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting, going back to Danielle's question about questions coming from employers, one of the interesting ones is we're receiving notes from doctors saying that an individual should not, go to work because they might get COVID-19 or more susceptible to COVID-19, but yet there's no order in the doctor's note stating that they should stay at home. It just says right. They might be. So that's the, right. As an employer, you're right. Balancing that note saying, well, does that mean they should be isolated? Does that mean they should be quarantined? Or is that just someone, hey, you got to watch yourself as an individual. And that's the balance that employers have to look at and following up. And for some employees, if you do receive a note like that from your doctor, you may want to go back and say, does this mean I need to be quarantined or isolated? Or is it something that I do have to go, I should, if I take all the proper precautions, social distancing, putting on a face mask, making sure I'm cleaning my hands constantly, does that mean I can go to work? And getting that clarification, because as from an employer stance, that would be a lot better for us to be able to say, yes, this is an isolation. They don't have to, and then they can't come into work. So a lot of that has to be with employees following up with their physicians in addressing that issue.
Correct. I would agree.
Another question that came in I would like to offer is, if I'm an employer with people on furlough, I have not received many response forms. I registered with SIDES, SIDES, to respond mm-hmm. electronically, but I've not heard anything back on that in 3 weeks. When, how should I learn that I can respond via electronic means?
Thank you first for signing up for SIDES. That's such a huge help to us. Thank you for doing that. If all employers could sign up for SIDES e-response, that makes our jobs so much easier. The current reason why you may not have received form requests from us yet is we're focusing on the easiest issues to resolve and get people paid. There's only so much my individual staff can do at a time. So we're trying to get as much information as we can for those we know we can get paid, and then work on those who need some more, who we need more information from on either the evenings or on the weekends when we're working Saturday or Sunday to gather that information. But those requests will be coming in. So just if you can check, two or three times a week. I wouldn't do it every day, but just check two or three times a week. Those requests will eventually start coming in. I think the last time I looked at the number, we have about 500,000 or 600,000 to send out. So we will be getting to those.
And I may be oversimplifying this for people, but this is just kind of how my brain thinks. I know a lot of people, when they're about to apply, don't want to do the wrong thing. They don't want to get right. sidetracked. They don't want to get stuck into a system where they've done something wrong and now it's going to take longer. So going to the website, looking at the checklist should help people determine where they should go and apply or if they should. But then I just think that a lot of people should, like you said before, apply, get into the queue, get into the system, and then your issue will be addressed as it goes through. So I know there's probably still going to be some very specific individualized questions that come through in the next couple minutes. But I think some people are just looking for that person who's just going to answer their question and help them through, because it's so nerve-wracking, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And I can tell you, I have our average handle time per call has increased, and that's not helping us either, right? Right. We have people that are, we know, oh, my lights just went out.
Oh, no.
That's interesting. I'm glad my party didn't go out. We have people that are, they know that we know they want to do the right thing, and they're trying not to make a mistake. The unemployment for a lot of people is a completely crazy experience, even without a pandemic occurring. And my staff get that, we get that, and we know that people are going to make mistakes as we all learn unemployment together, right? the best thing they can do to help us is use our website. We have a lot of information on there, and then just take their time filling in the application and submitting it. And then if there is something we need from you, we will reach out to you. We're working 7 days a week, so you could get a call from us at 6:30 in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, or even 3 o'clock on a Saturday. So we are working every single day to make sure we resolve all these issues and answer people's questions. And we are like the secretary mentioned, hiring to increase our capacity, because we know that that's what people ultimately want, is to just talk to us and for us to tell them, yes, you're okay.
Right. So. All right. So I have our last, three questions. Again, if anyone needs to email me directly, my email address was on there. This one says, at what percentage of work must I come off PUA? 25, 50, 75 of my usual. So at what percentage of work must I come off PUA benefits? 25, 50, 75 of her usual work?
I don't think we have a specific percentage. I'm looking to see if we have anything in our guidance we've received that speaks to that. I don't believe there's a specific percentage.
Okay. And if,
we can get back to you on that.
Okay. Question says it's for Ben. What about if you offer an employee a different shift so that they can come into an essential business, but they are covering childcare? Should they still get unemployment?
They could, because if at that point in time they're doing childcare because of the fact that, in one of the conditions under PUA or under the regular UC would be if you're, because of your childcare being closed because of it, you might be able to receive that. But that again is if the work is being offered in a regular situation, they would, and you fill out as the employer, you fill out the form that their work is eligible. The employee would then have to indicate what the exception would be for them to be qualified. And that's, again, why the law is written as may be eligible, because you have to, a lot of those factors come into play in making the determination if they would be eligible for the unemployment comp. But it would be that the employer would respond. The employee would have to say, oh, wait a second. I'm providing childcare because the daycare is closed. I can't do the second shift. And that might be a rational reason for them to receive unemployment.
Even if they're under a certain employee, like they're under 50 employees.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
I think her follow-up to that question, if you're offering a different shift, should they still get unemployment? She said they are under 50 employees. Does that factor into this scenario?
That's a great question. Shama, I don't know if you know the answer to that one.
Yeah, it wouldn't necessarily be. So I know in other situations, the number of employees you have may be a factor, but no, not for unemployment. You can have one employee and they could file and be in that situation and potentially be eligible.
I mean, the 50 number probably comes from another law, which was the Family First Response Act. So I think that in regard to FMLA and issues like that, but right. Not under unemployment. So it'd fall under a different law.
Well, it's 12:10. I want to be conscious of Ben and Shama's time. Thank you so very much for being here, answering our questions. I feel like we could do a whole Friday Zoom on this topic, but I appreciate you being available to answer these questions. As much as we know you're sympathetic to what everyone else is going through, we're sympathetic to what is happening for you and your law firm or for the department. A lot of questions, a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear, but we appreciate you taking time out of your day to help us. So we appreciate this, and we welcome you back anytime you want to talk and see the beautiful faces of the Upper Bucks region. We're here. So thank you to everyone who signed in. Again, I will send the PUC website, try to note some of this particular forms or areas that Secretary or Shama or Ben mentioned. And then if you have some questions, then we will try to answer it. This was recorded. We'll put it on our website. And just thank you again, Shama and Ben, and to Secretary. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Danielle.
All thank right. you, Danielle.
Everyone enjoy the rest of their Friday. Everyone stay safe, stay healthy, and we're all in this together. Take care, everyone.